So, good evening, good evening. Marcus says, wisdom and compassion. That's what I aspire to be all about. I don't always manage it. In fact, I often don't manage it. But when I'm at my best, I do. And that's when the magic happens. So that's where I aspire to be. I use an intuitive business plan and an intuitive marketing plan to grow my coaching practice. We don't have time to run through those in detail. However, I'll do my best to share some pointers with you on growing your coaching practice using an intuitive approach. And I'll make this as interactive as I can. Why do I call it the coaching journey? I assume that most of you want to have at least some paying clients. Therefore, there is an element of business about what you will be doing in your practice. As a business mentor, I've learned that every business journey is a personal journey, especially in the helping professions like coaching. So let's just unpick that a little bit. It's about business. So you have to ask yourself, how are you going to make money? It's personal. What's your intention? What do you want from your coaching practice? And it's a journey, not a destination. So how are you going to navigate to achieve both business growth and personal growth and keep them in harmony? And that's the challenge. That's the journey that you're on. And why do I suggest an intuitive approach? I believe that we all have an amazing resource within us, our intuition, which is underused in our modern, scientific, rational world. As I've learned to tune into my intuition more, I'm using it to make decisions, and I reckon I have better outcomes when I make intuitive decisions than when I make logical, rational decisions. That well-known fella, Albert Einstein, said, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honours the servant and has forgotten the gift." If you accept my proposition that you're on a journey as a coach wanting to build your practice and that you have a sacred gift of your intuition, then one way to approach this journey is to be more of yourself by using your intuition more. I'd like to share with you now some quick pointers to help you gain a deeper and richer understanding of who you are and where you want to go with a series of 7 questions to help you to tap into your intuition. So question 1, what is your life purpose? This gives you your direction of travel. If your coaching practice is congruent with your life purpose, you are more likely to find your flow. If your coaching practice is incongruent with your life purpose, in my view, you're wasting your time and you're missing out on the opportunity to be your best self. Does anyone in the room know their life purpose? Okay, there's a shaky hand over here. Are you just scratching your head, sir?
You ask if we know our life purpose.
Yeah?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is anybody in the room willing to share their life purpose? Yeah, please tell us. What's your name, first of all?
Vasilios.
Vasilios, tell us your life purpose.
Nice to meet all of you. Some faces I know them already, some of them still in the process of finding out. Since I was a little kid, I always wanted to help people find their path in life. And that's the major reason why I joined NAMI.
Could you say that again, please? To help people find the...
To find their purpose in life.
Their purpose in life. Okay, so we've got a really elegant life purpose there, which is to help people find their life purpose. Wow. Okay. Anything else coming up in the room around life purpose? Yes, sir.
I'll have a go. I'm Steve. Hi, everybody. So I think my purpose, certainly now, is to help everybody have a sense of excitement about the day they've got ahead of them.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Yeah, lady at the back. So there's a bandwidth there. Everybody's life purpose, it's the rudder to your boat. It's the most important thing. For me, it's the start point of everything. So I do urge you to explore your life purpose. And there are coaching exercises around this, if you don't know. But this for me is the foundation. This is where everything starts. So that's the most important question I always want to know from people when I'm working with them. What is your life purpose? Question one. Question two, who are you? We often see ourselves superficially as our role, employee, spouse, parent, son, daughter, etc. And this can become our identity. I was a soldier. That was my identity. It was who I was. It was a very strong identity. But at a deeper level, our values are often unconscious drivers of our behaviours and responses. And when we honour our values, we are aligned with ourselves and we are powerful. When we are in conflict with our values, we feel that something is wrong, even if we don't know why, and we are demotivated. So I'll give you an example. I've done a lot of values work on myself. Every time I do it, I learn something more about myself. And so far, I've learned that my top values are learning, healing, spirituality, giving, independence, grace, vitality, connectedness, inner harmony. And I'm sure I will discover more values as time goes on. Is there anybody in the room who knows some of their top values? This lady over here, are you nodding?
Yes.
Would you like to share some with us? Respect for what or for whom?
For everything.
For everything.
Life, other people, nature, the environment, everything.
So it's a very universal principle of respect. Lovely, thank you. Any other values emerging? Shibu.
My values are first to be an expert in Shibu, and training and coaching, gaining knowledge. For me, the second is creativity, and the third is freedom.
Okay.
And
and how did you discover those values?
I did a value discovery thing. I actually had this diary, it's a gratitude journal, and they had a list of different values. And I sort of picked what I liked and then created my own around it.
Lovely. So there's an example of how you can do this for yourself. But there are lots of ways to elicit values. But again, I think it's really powerful work to understand ourselves and what drives us. Question three. Where are you going? So what do you want from your practice? What's your aim? And let me just break that out for you. Ambition. A for ambition. Is this a scale-up business you want to grow? You know, Animas 2? Or is this a little lifestyle business, maybe a part-time revenue stream, or something in between? So understanding your ambition is important. What's the impact you want to make in the world? When you move on, what has changed as a result of your presence? How has the world been changed? How have people been changed? That's the effect you'll have. What impact do you want to make? M for money. What do you want to earn from your practice? I'm not talking about turnover, revenue, profits, gross profit, net profit. How much do you want to get paid from your business, from your coaching practice? Nice and simple. Money going to your bank account. And finally, one that's often overlooked. E for emotion. How do you want to feel about your coaching practice? Has anybody had the opportunity to reflect on these sort of issues around their practice? I'm not seeing any hands. Or any one of these. Does anybody have an idea of their ambition, their impact, how much they want to earn, or how they want to feel about their practice? Over here. Okay. So it's very much about the impact you want to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also it's emotion.
And that's why you want to... Okay, but... Yeah. So what would be the emotions around that?
Just to feel of use, actually. To feel of value. To feel that very natural, intrinsic part of myself is...
desire to learn and to kind of find all these different modalities to support people, are then, you know, the fruit of that is that people are actually receiving some kind of support and help and guidance.
I've got a word coming up. May I share it with you?
Yeah.
For that, fulfillment.
Yeah.
So you want to feel fulfilled?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, you get the idea. So these, again, very powerful to understand what you want out of your coaching practice. It's a little bit like goal setting. It's not quite the same. But if you understand your ambition, the impact you want to have, how much you want to earn, and how you want to feel about your practice, it will stand you in good stead. It gives you something to aim for. And what's question four? What's the vision for your practice? In business, we say we get to choose our own adventure. How fantastic is that? We get to choose. But I call this the luxury and the agony of choice. If there are any existential coaches in the room, you'll know what I mean. Man is condemned to be free. So you have to choose. But you do have a choice, which is amazing. Remember, it's a journey. So what journey do you want to go on? What adventure do you want? So is there anybody in the room who has an adventure, a vision for their practice? And I've brought my Harry Potter magic wand along tonight, abracadabra. You can be, do, and have anything you want. So in this amazing world that I've just created for you, what is it that you want in your practice? What's your vision for your ideal practice? Does anybody have that? Yes.
Speaking or mentoring. So I'd like to have a space for sharing my beliefs and giving recommendations, and also to help to elicit all the answers from the clients and find what will be best for them. So I want to become some kind of mini celebrity or celebrity like Tony Robbins or Andy Harrington. So in order to have a scalable business that will work also without me in this business, and also doing one-on-one, but at very high cost.
I can feel the energy coming off you. Does that motivate and inspire you?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Bingo. You got it. Anybody else got something motivational and inspiring for their vision? You're hiding, aren't you? Yeah? No? Okay. Vision. Very powerful. Question five. How will you get there? There are so many challenges, so many new skills to learn when we start on this journey, and most of us try to do everything ourselves. We find that we're good at some things, not so good at others. For example, most coaches will cringe at the thought of sales and marketing. We all have talents and strengths, and wouldn't it be cool to play to them rather than our weaknesses, the things that we're not good at? So take a moment to reflect on your talents and strengths. What's coming up in the room? Who's got some talents and strengths to share? Yes, please.
So I used to be an international athlete, which a bit like being a soldier is a really strong identity. And when it was over, I kind of felt that was it. So I've now realised that actually I can bring a lot of that to my coaching, and the coaching that I want to work with is about the struggles with identity for retiring athletes or soldiers or policemen. So I see it as quite a unique, it's not a talent, but an experience, unique experience of having been on the World Athletic stage and almost having to die twice, because you die once when you get rid of that identity.
So I'm putting that down as an experience that you have. It's a learning that you have that you can bring. Okay, lovely. Any other talents and strengths in the room that you'd like to share? You're a shy lot, aren't you? Okay. So there's something that you can build on. And question six, what does the world need? I'd like you all to put your hand on your heart, maybe close your eyes or lower your gaze, and just ask yourself, what does the world need? Take a moment. What does the world need? What comes up? What does the world need?
A lot more love.
Beautiful, yes. We could all do with more love, couldn't we?
A lot more love.
What else does the world need?
Healing. I think direction, healing as well.
Direction and healing, yeah. Anything else over here?
Consciousness.
Consciousness, lovely, yeah. Anything else at the back?
Education.
Education, hope. Okay, so there's getting a lot of responses around what the world needs. So, you know, that's coming over loud and clear. And question 7, bringing this all together, what is your sweet spot? So if we map onto the ever so useful interconnecting three circles model, what your life purpose is, what your talents and strengths are, and what the world needs, and in the middle, there's a big hint, that could be your sweet spot. Okay. Has anybody done this exercise? If you have, is there anything to share that might be coming up as your sweet spot? I don't know whether people were saying, no, I haven't, or yes, I have done it. Has anybody got a sweet spot or a hint of a sweet spot that they'd like to share with us? Maybe not. So I'll share mine. So my purpose in life, it's a bit vague, but I've stuck with it. It works for me. It's to learn from life and to teach others. I guess I'm doing that right now. What the world needs, respect and love, oddly enough, for ourselves, so that we can heal and be our best selves. For others, as we would for our children, their children, and so on down the generations. And for the planet Earth, as if we were a guest in someone else's home. That's what I came up with. And the world also needs innovative business models which are based on giving and receiving, not taking. My strengths and talents, business process, leadership management, curiosity, empathy, compassion. Compassion is almost a disability for me because it's highly developed. It can be a disability. My strengths, connectedness, learner, strategic, belief, and futuristic. And they all come from a certain psychometric. So my sweet spot is a portfolio. There isn't one thing. So I'm about business mentoring and consulting. And as a coach, I'm a transition transformer, whether that is career, health and wellness, therapeutic coaching. I'm also a creator and an innovator. And because I don't know what's coming next, but I do know that I haven't finished yet. This journey's only just started, so I know there's more to come on this journey. As a business mentor, I do a significant amount of voluntary work, as well as paid work. My coaching style is transpersonal. That's about working with values, energy, vitality, and spirit. And I'm drawn to the dark side, coaching with a client's shadow, to find the light in the darkness. That's what I'm all about. As a creator, I'm a founder, and I start things. So I founded my company. I broke out the coaching brand as a separate entity. I founded the Salisbury Coaching Circle and NLP Group. I lead that. I'm the co-founder of the Wiltshire Business Mentoring Scheme. I'm a founder member of the Cancer Coaching Community. I seem to be starting these things up all the time. That's just who I am. As an innovator, I've developed intuitive plans for everything. Business, marketing, well-being. And I'm using voluntary private partnerships as a business model. So, in summary, I've offered you 7 questions to help you grow your practice. What is your life purpose, which is your direction of travel? Who are you, looking at your values? Where are you going? What's your aim? What is your vision to motivate and inspire you? How will you get there, using your strengths and talents? What does the world need? And what's your sweet spot, where your purpose and talents intersect with the world's needs? Remember, every business journey is a personal journey, especially in the helping professions like coaching. If you don't know what type of coaching practice you want to build, and you don't have the answers to these questions yet, no matter where you are in your journey, that's okay. And it's okay because this is your journey. You start from here, where you are today, right now, by being more of yourself, using your intuition. It's okay not to know what you need to do next. It's okay to have fun, to experiment, to be playful, to allow for learning and development. And when we learn how to be more of ourselves, we don't need to make things happen. We can allow things to happen. I'd like to close by sharing my top three tips to help you honour the sacred gift of your intuition on this journey you're on to develop your coaching practice. So my first tip is let go of external voices. Trust your gut. Listen to your gut and trust yourself. My tip two, follow the energy and see where it takes you. You'll be amazed at where you end up. And tip three, give yourself permission to enjoy the journey. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. Hi. Oh, thank you. Good way to start. So I asked myself the question, what would I share with you if I had no fear? So here goes. If you know me already, you might know a bit of my story. So back in 2009, I had a lot of anxiety, so social anxiety specifically. I was very depressed and had a lot of chronic pain. So I found CBT and therapy really, really useful at that time. And it helped me to transition through what was probably the worst time of my life. Fast forward to my Animas coaching training, and I had such a transformational journey during the training. I left the training, I just felt completely unstoppable. I was just like, yes, I am going to do this. I'm going to go out there and be the most amazing coach. Nothing's going to stop me whatsoever. And then something stopped me. Out of absolutely nowhere, I developed a very, very strong case of anxiety. Just one day overnight, it just happened. It was nothing like I'd ever experienced before. I had a lot of paranoia. I felt like I couldn't trust anyone in the world. I literally felt like my friends were manipulating me. I felt like, I went to the library and changed all my internet passwords just in case someone had hacked my computer. Like I was that bad. So this was, you know, if I'd have had some self-doubt and some self-talk going on, I would have had the tools to deal with that. So that wouldn't have stopped me building my business. But this definitely was stopping me. I felt like I was going to have to move to the countryside and shave my head and change my name. Like I just didn't know what to do. I now understand that what was going on was some people call it a spiritual emergency or a spiritual awakening. I know that people have had quite nice, gentle spiritual awakenings. Mine was more of a smash. You know, everything kind of fell apart and then I had to pick the pieces up. So at that point, I obviously had tools that I'd learned, but that wasn't really cutting it for me. I needed something more deeper that was going to go to like the more of a subconscious level. So this is when I discovered EFT and matrix reimprinting. And I will talk a little bit about it, but essentially it helped me to uncover all of the limiting beliefs, get rid of all the anxiety. Within 2 weeks, I was back to normal. So I know a lot of people who go through this kind of dark night of the soul and can spend a long time there. So I'm very grateful that I managed to come through that quite quickly. So I'm very, very passionate about EFT and Matrix. They're tools that I use with all of my clients. It just simply cuts through a lot of the limiting beliefs and all of the childhood experiences that cause us to live our lives the way we do. So, what else am I going to say? So, yeah, so fast forward to where I am now. It's been a year. It feels like about 10 years. I've done 400 hours of coaching. I've worked with CEOs. I've actually helped a wonderful lady who was in a marketing role become a CEO, which is fantastic. I've helped someone quadruple her prices within a few months. I've helped other people just get a lot more confident online and, you know, with live streaming and videos and that kind of thing. I'm living my dream. I'm helping people to live without fear and just be courageous and, you know, talking of values as where's Ross gone? talking of values, you know, I'm all about courage and vulnerability and showing yourself to the world. So yeah, I've also got a Facebook group of coaches that's really, really engaged, and it's really great to have people in there all sharing their experiences. So I just want you to know it's not always an easy road. You know, there's a lot you'll see online which, you know, everyone's doing amazing and, you know, everyone's really positive and stuff, but it is really, really hard. You know, I've had probably, if I haven't been crying once a week, and then something's been going well. So there's a lot of overwhelm, there's a lot of frustration that goes with starting your own business. So I just want you to know that is part of it. I mean, if you don't have that, then amazing, I'm really happy for you, but it's I don't know if that's necessarily normal. So sorry, yeah, don't do it. No, do. I mean, it's the most rewarding thing, right? But when we get close to working on our purpose, for some reason we just hit all this resistance, and it's just a case of finding the tools that work for us to help us get through them. So I'm going to start. I've made a little framework. We're coaches. We all have a little framework, don't we? So it started off as ABC, and then I added on the D today. So I'll get through this. So the first step of my framework is... okay. I'm not sure about that. That's why he's in black. Nope. It's not going to work. Okay, so the first one is acceptance. So whenever you're feeling resistance, whenever you're feeling overwhelmed, frustrated, what's the first thing you tend to do?
Blame yourself,
yeah. So you get more frustrated, more overwhelmed, and you just get more and more resistant to what's happening. So what I've found is really, really useful is acceptance. So allowing yourself to know that, okay, you're feeling a bit overwhelmed right now. That's okay. That's part of the journey. Sorry, did someone say something?
Nope. Just a sneeze.
Oh, right, okay. one of the tools I love for acceptance is EFT. So it's a way of tapping into the body's energy system, and just whatever's going on. EFT is emotional freedom technique. So you might know it as tapping. So you tap on meridian points on your body and you just go, even though I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'm okay, I'm doing okay. And you just tap, and it just helps you to relax. And it's a really, really quick tool. I've got quite a few videos on my Facebook page if you want to check any of those out. It's a really, really simple technique that you can use when you're in the moment and you're feeling like you're melting down, which happens to me frequently. A good way of accepting is to keep track of how well you've done so far, you know, and to give yourself credit for what you've done so far. You know, there's only about 7% of people in the country who are doing what you're doing. You know, starting your own business is a tough job. You know, you're probably the worst boss in the world. You know, you're going to potentially leave a job where you've got structure, you've got people telling you what to do, you've got deadlines, and all of a sudden you've got this empty diary, and you just think, what am I going to do? You know, a lot of us struggle with creating our own structure and getting ourselves going in the mornings. So, you know, some mornings, if you're getting out of bed and you're doing one thing, then you're doing well. You know, there's been days where I've just been like, all I need to do is create an email signature, and I couldn't even do that. So, you know, if you're doing one thing towards your business a day, then that's absolutely fine. You know, you're going to have days where you feel really, really motivated and really upbeat, and you're going to make loads of phone calls, and you're going to have some great moments with clients, but then you're going to have those days where you're just like, I just don't want to do it. Yeah, I mean, is this sounding... I'm getting a few nods. Is it sounding real? Give yourselves a break. B is build a vision. Can I spell vision? Maybe. So we're all, again, we're probably quite familiar with building visions and having a vision for our business. I just want to do a little exercise with you. It might be slightly different to what you've done before. So if you want to close your eyes, you can, or you can just look down. Just take a few deep breaths. And just imagine that you're just about to walk through a door. And on the other side of that door, you'll see Philip Schofield. You're on the set of This Morning. And you're here to talk about your book that you've written. And in this book, you share stories about all of your wonderful clients. You're the best life coach in the UK. All of your heroes are now your clients. You're an influencer. And Philip Schofield is going to ask you questions about your book in front of the whole of the UK. How does that feel? Does that feel exciting? Okay. Does it feel terrifying? Okay. So for those of you who think it's exciting, this is good news. For those of you finding that terrifying or scary, just notice where you feel it in your body, that feeling. How do you know that you're terrified? Is it in your heart? In your stomach? In your head? Just if you shout out a few of you. In the stomach. In the heart as well? Yeah. So what you're experiencing there is a limiting belief that's being brought up. So there's some resistance to that being the truth. And what happens when you have these limiting beliefs is your subconscious mind is going to want to keep you away from that vision. So if you've built a vision and you're imagining it and you're feeling any kind of resistance in your body, then there's some work to do. And it doesn't have to be Philip and Holly. It could just be, you know, standing up on stage. It could be having a discovery call with a client. You know, it could be charging £10, £100, £1,000 for a session. So whenever you can imagine the thing that you're wanting to build, so the vision, if you feel any resistance in your body, just start thinking about what it could be. So you can ask yourself questions. You know, what is this feeling? What's the emotion? Any emotion you could identify that came up? Okay, lovely. Awesome. Yeah, well, I'm going to see you on Philip and Holly's day now. Any of the negative ones? Fear? Yeah.
Nervousness.
Sorry, nervous? Yeah. Yeah, frustration, overwhelm. Anything that's even the very slightly negative emotions, like boredom, frustration, overwhelm, these are all signs of fear. So I will give you some tools towards the end as to what you can do if you are feeling those. But it's just a really nice way to check in and to see it, you know, because if you're trying to work towards something and you keep moving away from it, you know, you keep getting overwhelmed or you keep changing your mind, you know, confusion is a great one. You know, I'm going to do this, no, I'm going to do that, no, I'm going to do this, no, I'm going to do that. These are all actually ways that your body is keeping you safe because it's perceiving that vision as danger. And it's like, no, I don't want you to go there. Last time you stood up on stage when you were 5, you got really embarrassed and you wet yourself. So no, let's not go there again. So that's what's happening. And that's another useful thing to remember, you know, to accept that this isn't yourself. You're not sabotaging yourself. You're not doing this to hurt yourself. You're actually doing this to protect yourself. That was a huge revelation for me when I learned that. So, combating fear. Let's see. So, who's got some ways to combat fear? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not being schizophrenic or anything, but it's like a conscious voice that tells you stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a kind of a CBT tool to like listen to the voice and then have an alternate voice. You know, we like to be the judge, jury, and executioner of our own lives, so we might as well play for the defence now and again. Great one.
I usually use all. very strong approach. Like, for example, if I want to do something but I got fear, but I don't want to do it, I put myself a deadline and I'm going to jump no matter what.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a little bit strict, but it works for me.
Uh-huh.
Because, and I always, you know, say you're going to jump and then you will have the resource to deal with it. So I comfort myself, but I'm also saying by this time you're going to do it.
Brilliant,
Yeah, and another way is just instead, like, try, for example, if I'm anxious and that, like, usually I got fears, and from the fears it becomes anxiety.
Mm.
Then I try just to think bigger. So, for example, sometimes I can be anxious about something that if you think bigger is actually so small that you think, oh my gosh, I'm anxious for this thing that is such mm-hmm. a bigger picture that it relieves the fear.
Okay, lovely. Anything else? Yeah?
Mindset journaling. That's something I engage in quite a lot in terms of overcoming stresses.
Journaling, yeah. And do you just write, or do you ask yourself questions?
Yeah, it depends what exercise I'm doing. I do a gratitude list every day. Mm. But in terms of that, I also do visionary exercises. Mm-hmm. I've got about 12 that I kind of dip between, depending on what it is that I'm feeling to express.
Yeah.
The one that I do every day is gratitude.
Fantastic. Over here. Yeah.
Yeah, preparation. So if there's something coming up that I'm really kind of anxious about, then just kind of making sure that, you know, I've kind of got everything in place and I know what I'm doing before I'm going to go and do it.
Yeah, brilliant. We so should have done that. Anyone else?
Just ask.
Ask? Ask who?
Last night I had to go to a meeting and there was a lot of negative feelings about it, and so I just put it out and said, I ask that this meeting will be great.
Mm.
And there's a woman that I was expecting to see, and she normally looks very ugly, and when I
said that,
she was actually beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And by seeing that, this is amazing. And she was lovely. And so it might be me that's the problem. But nevertheless, the meeting went great.
Mm.
And it was joyous and lovely. And we didn't want to leave.
Fantastic.
It was amazing. All the changes. And I thought, God, what's happened here? There was nothing to feel about it. I just asked.
Brilliant, love that.
Somebody heard me.
Yeah. And there was one more over here, I think.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I really love the Animas approach of remembering that your client is creative, resourceful and whole. And my love language is words of affirmation. So if I'm really feeling bad, I tend to go and stand in front of a mirror and just almost say to myself for about, you know, 3 minutes, I am creative, resourceful and whole. And I find that just brings a real sense of calm.
That's fantastic, I love that.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that probably embrace the fear.
Mm-hmm.
To yourself that it's okay to feel this way.
Mm.
Yeah, but sometimes it doesn't work. So sometimes subconscious prevail and over, like, take you over.
Yeah.
So probably want to hear more.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things we can do, and I think if we can just also test out different tools and see what works for us, because we're all going to be different. In terms of how I work when I've got a vision, I try to just not worry about all of the steps. So, you know, if I've got an example. I'm not great, to be honest, at like long-term visions. I'm better at a really short-term vision, so there aren't a lot of steps to get there anyway. But if you can just think, like, what's the next, and you can just ask yourself, like, what's the next step, and not worry about the whole journey. Because if you kind of think, I need to have it all mapped out, then you're not going to go anywhere. You need to get moving, and that's going to combat the fear as well. Because once you get experience and you get moving, you'll wonder what you're worried about in the first place. Steve Jobs, who said you can't connect the dots until you've got to the other end or something. I can't remember what that quote is, but yeah, so you can't connect the dots going forward. That's it. So my D, my final, is do it. So yeah, you can sit around and clear all your fear and manifest and meditate and do yoga and think, yes, this is going to happen. But you know, if you don't actually get on and do something, it is not going to happen. I was at a seminar last year and a woman had a hand up. She's like, I've been manifesting my book for 2 years. And the guy said, have you written anything? She said, no. So, you know, yes, the universe can help, but you do actually have to put some action in place. So a few options. So we've come up with a lot of the ones I was going to talk about. Just in terms of fears, actually, it's worth exploring. So journaling is a great way of doing this, exploring your fears. And some areas that I've found are really, really prevalent with new coaches is around expertise. So, you know, you've recently qualified. I don't know enough. I need more training. I haven't got enough experience with clients. I don't have enough results. And that's all just self-talk, you know, that there are people out there who have had no training, they charge shed loads of money for coaching and they get away with it. So, you know, if you're coaching during training, you're getting fantastic results with people. So it really doesn't matter about your expertise, you know, you're holding space for people, you're loving them, you know, all of that stuff is really amazing. Money. The big M word. So I find there's a lot of beliefs around money itself. We're very caring, empathetic, intuitive people, and we want to help everyone and save the world, and we think that money is evil and everyone is horrible who's got money. And money is just a tool, you know. If people like us have more money, then the world is going to be a better place because we're going to do better things with it. So, yeah, don't write off money. You know, people say they don't want money, then, you know. It's just a tool and you can do good things with it. It's not going to make you an evil, horrible person. It's just going to make you better at what you're doing because you're going to be able to help more and more people with it. You know, if you say, oh, I don't want money, I just want to help people, you might be able to help about 20 people a week. But if you have more money and you can, you know, you can donate it, you can create courses for people, you can do free things, you can do whatever you want, so you can help a lot more people when you've got money. So we need to love money. Money around like our relationship with money as well. So, you know, a lot of us have grown up with parents who have, you know, given us money conditionally. So, you know, you have to be good enough. You need to deserve it. Maybe you grew up without money and, you know, think that money is hard to get. Money doesn't grow on trees. There's so many money stories that we have. And it's really worth exploring these. The way I've found to be really useful is to write statements and then finish them off in my mind. So things like, you know, if money turned up at the door, I would say, where the hell have you been? What do you say?
Yes, please.
Yes, please, yeah. Yeah. With money, I will be, and then evil or whatever it is. Fears around visibility. So being seen, standing up, talking, you know, a lot of us are introverts and we like one-to-one deep connections, and the thought of coming up on stage and talking is terrifying. Tap on that. A lot of this is around vulnerability and actually just being your true self, you know, because if you're scared of being vulnerable and you're worried about judgment, you know, you're not going to want to put yourself out there. So definitely something to work on. Brené Brown's one of my heroes, if you've not watched her TED talk, then that's a good one to watch. You know, I know that the more I get out there and the more I start expressing my views, there are people who are not going to agree with me. You know, I've lost friends who think that I'm going mad because I'm now talking about the universe and all this woo-woo stuff. And that's fine. You know, that's their shit. Fears around putting ourselves first, being selfish, yeah, saying no to people and actually valuing our own time, valuing our own expertise. You know, we want to help everyone, but we need to put ourselves first, you know, put our oxygen mask on first. So there's loads and loads of stuff to work on, which is awesome, because you've all got lots of friends who are coaches. So, so definitely, like, keeping in touch with people and swapping and, yeah, just helping each other out on the journey is really good. In terms of do it, I've kind of combined these now, haven't I? The people around you, you know, they're so important. You know, if you've got people who are bringing you down and who don't believe in you, then you're going to bring yourself down. So surround yourself with people who are doing what you're doing. And also surround yourself with people who are a bit further ahead in the journey. But don't compare yourself to them and think, I need to be where they are. You know, I think that's why you need both. You know, you need people who are where you are now so that you can all help each other. But then it's good to have someone who's a bit ahead of you just to inspire you and give you something to work towards and push you. Is that my wake-up time? So I would say, I mean, get yourself a coach. You know, if you really want to accelerate your business and get ahead, because we have so much resistance. I mean, was that 5 minutes or was that the end? Have I gone it? It's gone. End. Okay. All right. But yeah, I mean, if you want anything else from me, then just stay afterwards. I'll have a chat. But yeah, those are my four parts. There we go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Obviously, I've got huge amounts to live up to now. So a little caveat on the selling point. I have a sales background. Some of my background, I'll get onto it in a bit more detail in a minute, but it means that I've spent about 15 years kind of deeply immersed in sales and have kind of worked out what the kind of mechanics are that sit underneath it, in the hope that I no longer have to actually directly sell to people. And I know that for coaches, and it was the same for me, the idea of selling is a bit of a dirty word, and the idea of, as Sam touched on, people have a sort of resistance around money sometimes. So for me, it was very important to work out how to grow my practice without feeling like I was kind of flogging a product to someone. So hopefully, I'll explain to you how I've done that. So a little bit of context on me to begin with. As Marcus said, I have a full-time job and also a coaching practice which I run alongside that. The way that looks in my life, if you like, is that I work 9 till 5, Monday to Friday, most of the time, and I coach in the evenings, anywhere between 2 and 4 hours a week in the evenings, and occasionally in the mornings as well. And that means it's obviously a pretty full-time existence. I'm obviously pretty busy and pretty tired a lot of the time, but that's how it looks. Who my clients are and the niche distraction, Marcus touched on this as well. I have a really, really broad range of clients. I've got a guy who's in his early 20s who suffers from chronic OCD and had to leave full-time education for it. A lot of my clients are women tend to be in their 30s looking for love or managing big breakups or things like that. And then at the other end of the scale, I've got a really successful barrister who wants to be an astrologist and is scared about telling her friends, basically. So she's built this huge identity. Ross touched on identity before. She's built this huge identity as a successful barrister, and she's literally terrified of talking to her friends about it because she thinks it's very spiritual. They won't understand. I mentioned the niche distraction there for a reason. I wasted a huge amount of time trying to work out what my niche should be. And what I should actually have done in hindsight is just got on with it and done anything, really, and then sort of worked out if there was a niche along the way. I've done about 200 hours of coaching, paid coaching now, and I still don't know quite what the niche is. I've also got a lot of entrepreneurs that come to me. I don't really know why, but I love working with them because they go and do stuff rather than saying they're going to do stuff and then not doing stuff. And they come back to you sort of halfway between sessions and say, right, I've done all that. What do I do next? But I think it can be really distracting. And actually, I wish someone had said, stop worrying about to niche or not to niche and just go and do and see what you find out about yourself and about your style of coaching and the kind of people you attract. And when we talk about message, which I'll do in a moment, I think that once you get your message, your marketing message, absolutely right, then that can almost be your niche, the kind of people you attract and what you kind of put out there. But it may not be specifically around a certain industry or type of person or whatever. Why it's important for me to grow my business? Well, Marcus touched on this, but basically I have worked sort of 9 to 5 for my entire life. And I realized after a while that I didn't want to carry on doing that. I wanted to be my own boss of my own time, and I want to be able to create a business where I'm making enough money that I can choose what I do when. And I don't want to be working 5 days a week and have 2 days off to enjoy myself or recover. I want to be working for 2 days a week and have 5 days off learning to skydive and going traveling and doing amazing things with fun people. So that's why it's important to me. I think this is another important point as well. What does growing your practice actually look like? Does it mean getting more clients? Does it mean getting your existing clients, or not existing clients, but your next clients to be paying you higher fees? Or does it mean fewer clients paying higher fees, which sounds weird, but that's exactly what I want. At the moment, I never have fewer than 15 clients, which when you have a full-time job is loads of clients, trust me. And I realise it's a nice problem to have, but actually I'd like fewer clients paying higher fees for that exact reason. Or it could be for you a more regular flow of new clients. So a couple of years ago, my new clients were quite sporadic. I'd get one, and then 6 weeks later, I might get another one. Eventually, I got it into a situation where I was getting sort of 1.5 new clients every month. And that, for me, in terms of a business, felt much better. Because, well, it actually felt like a business rather than a hobby, basically. So it's worth, I think, having a think about, if you want to grow your business, what is the kind of metric by which you're measuring that? So this is a really quick summary of what I'm going to talk about. So nailing my message. I had a long sort of hard think about how I've grown my business and what the kind of most important parts of that were. And I broke it down into 3 stages. So nailing my message, by which I mean my marketing message, how I'm kind of putting myself in front of people. And then if people do come a knocking or pick up the phone to me, what I do with those inquiries, how I convert them. And then finally, creating the right environment. For yourself and for your business, and indeed for your client, in order for you all to enjoy that kind of process. And that last one was the hardest one for me to understand that was even necessary, that you actually need to create an environment for you to kind of succeed in. And then a couple of tiny little bonus bits at the end, beating the grind in banking credit, which are little phrases I've talked to myself about in the mirror, which I will tell you a bit more about, and creating a meaningful support network, which Sam spoke about. So that's a brief summary for you. So, the importance of nailing your message. For me, it was a realization that took a long time coming. But if you can get your message absolutely right and authentic, you'll never have to sell it to anybody, because the only people you will speak to will be the ones to whom that message actually means something. And if you don't like the idea of having a consultation call where at the end of it you actually have to do some selling, then that's why that's so important. Finding emotional resonance in your message. It's a different way of saying exactly the same thing, basically. But effectively, you're looking for something, you're looking for a way to kind of chime a chord inside somebody. So when they read it, they go, that's me. Or when they speak to you, they go, that's me. By the way, I've intentionally done these slides. They look quite wordy, but so that I can share them if you want them afterwards. So you don't have to write it all down. So they are quite wordy, but they should make sense without me waffling over the top of them. Finding that thing inside people which when they read it, they go, that's absolutely me. The way that I kind of failed at this for quite a long time, because I was trying to work out what I thought people wanted from me as a coach and then trying to write that. And I wrote a million different iterations of it, and none of it worked. And then I tried a different approach, which was basically, well, how do I want my life to look? Like, what are the things that are really important to me? If I designed my life, how would it look? How would I want people to respond to me? How would I want to, what sort of impact would I want to have on people? What would I want my future to look like? All that kind of stuff. And because that was about just purely what I wanted, rather than my vision of what I thought other people might want, I find it very, very easy to come up with it. So I wrote it, and yeah, I rewrote it 2 or 3 times, but it was a much, much easier process. In that, you can obviously also talk about any challenges you may have overcome, any difficulties that you've had in your life, and how this vision that you have kind of helped you through that. What I came up with in the end was this, it's a strap line, but there is some text behind it as well, which I will show you at the end, but it's basically live powerfully. And it's a sort of umbrella sentence under which sits this idea that it's basically about choice, that you can control your situation, that you have power over yourself, and that you don't have to be sort of blown around by other people. You don't have to give away that power to other people. So I'll show you that at the end, but it seems to have struck something in people. And whenever I have a consultation call with someone, I ask them why they picked up the phone to me or why they became a client. And they always cite that, which means I know I've done something right with it. Being consistent with your message throughout the client journey is a really important thing that I learned, because if you write all this amazing stuff on your website about how you're going to change someone's life and how you're going to do it, and then they speak to you on the phone and you sound like a wet weekend, they are not going to believe you. You are not going to stack up in their head. And the Life Coach Directory is obviously a big resource for most of us. That's where I get pretty much all my clients from. You're not alone on the Life Coach Directory. There are hundreds of us. So the question is, how do you stand out amongst all of those people? And one of the things that people are doing when they are combing through the Life Coach Directory looking for people is, yes, they're looking for people they want to maybe put a phone call into, but they're also looking for reasons to take people off that list, because they're trying to break it down into, who am I going to work with? They're trying to funnel it down. So the consistency is important, because if you have all this amazing stuff on your website, but they speak to you on a wet weekend, or you then send them an email and they go, well, this guy doesn't sound very powerful. Why, like, you know, what's the purpose of this? Or you don't follow up with them in a particularly efficient way, having said that efficiency is one of your, you know, key values, then it just falls apart and they will strike you off the list. Most of the prospective clients I speak to have spoken to four or five other coaches as well as me, or plan to speak to four or five other coaches as well as me. So, as it says there, in a crowded marketplace, potential clients are quick to spot inconsistencies, and we are in a really crowded marketplace and getting ever more crowded as this industry continues to kind of explode in this country. So that was an important thing for me to understand, because sometimes I realised when I was looking back at an email exchange or a text exchange or something with a potential client, I was like, when I wrote that, I thought it sounded really kind of vibrant and powerful, but if I was reading it from the client side, would I have just thought he was being really abrupt? So it's a difficult balance to get right, but I think it's worth being conscious of. So converting every lead, I know that sounds quite clinical, but I do have a background in sales. There's some really basic stuff in here which I know from my kind of professional background, if you like, and some of this is stuff that I've learned along the way in the coaching sphere. By far the most important one is the top one, reply promptly. If someone comes to you to say, I might potentially want to give you some money and start a transaction for what you're able to give to me, don't leave it a day. Don't leave it 12 hours. Don't go, oh, I'll get back to them in the morning. Get back to them within an hour and do whatever your next stage of your consultation process is, do it then. Because otherwise someone else will beat you to it. One of the other five people that they've left a message for will call them back. And all they need is that one magical conversation where they think, yeah, I really want to work with this guy or this girl. And then you're done, because they've already done it. They've formed that connection with somebody. So be the first person to reply. Lead the process confidently. I know that leading is like a dirty word in coaching. But actually, coaching itself, yes, is non-advisory and non-directive and all the rest of it. But when a potential client comes to you, they might know they want coaching, but they might not know much else about what that process could look like. So they are looking to be led. At the time when you are, when they're having a consultation with you, whether you do it on the phone or in person, they are looking for some sort of guidance from you as to what that is going to look like. They'll all have the same questions, they always do. How will the process work? Where will I meet you? How often will we see each other? Do I have to pay you up front? Yes. So all those questions. So make sure you have snappy answers to those. But also be prepared to lead that conversation and say, well, this is how it works if you choose to work with me. Because they are looking for someone to take them inside that structure. What happens in there is, you know, is sort of pure coaching, if you like. But on the outside of that, they want to feel like there is some sort of structure. It gives people comfort and confidence to know there is some kind of structure around what's happening. And this is where we get into the not selling bit. Focus the conversation on listening to and understanding them, not on selling your services. Most people who pick up the phone to you won't have been coached before, which means they won't have experienced a conversation like coaching before. And I don't know if any of you remember your first ever situation where you were being coached. It's a very, very different space to what you're kind of used to. Someone's just asking you questions in a very non-judgmental way. They're not interrupting you. They're letting you speak. People aren't expecting it because they've not experienced it before. So if you give them your absolute fireworks of coaching on that call or in the in your consultation, then they are going to naturally be blown away because it is a very unusual situation for them. They will also feel very listened to and very cared for because you are listening to what they're saying and then asking them questions only about that and digging and digging and digging. So for that reason, it can be quite quick and easy in a way to begin to sort of cause not potentially a shift in someone, but the idea that a shift could happen potentially. So these two kind of meld together. Treat them as if they're already a client, which I've sort of said already. Give them a glimpse inside the theatre. So I like this metaphor. So hands up if you have been to the Royal Albert Hall. Anyone? Lots of you. Brilliant. So as I'm sure you'll remember, when you've got past the box office, you go up to the right level, and then you walk around the outside of the building to find where you go down to your seats. And as you walk past each door that isn't your door, you get this tiny little window, and through the window you can see this amazing space, this huge, huge theatrical space, and it's all kind of red velvet curtains and chandeliers and orchestra pit and all the rest of it. And you get a little tantalising glimpse of what it is that you're about to experience. And I, for myself, find that very exciting as I walk from sort of one side around to the other. I can see this amazing vision. And that, I think, is what I have tried to do in consultation calls, is to give people a little glimpse of this huge possibility that sits behind it. The only way to do that is to give them basically a demonstration of what you're able to do. So don't hold back and give them your absolute best coaching would be my advice there. And then this is a big one. Share your experience of how coaching has impacted your own life and hold nothing back. They need to believe it's real. So on a consultation call, I'm always looking for an opener. I'm looking for an opportunity to tell my own story to them. And that's not because I like the sound of my own voice, although mic'd up, I actually do quite like the sound of my own voice. It's because if they understand that you have had a real and genuine experience of coaching that has caused you to become a coach, then they are far more likely to believe the impact of what it is that's possible. So I do tell that story on pretty much every coach consultation call that I have. And I'll share it with you now just very briefly. I'll give you an abridged version. But basically, I had 10 years, pretty much my whole adult life at that time, of very, very serious depression. I'd been to my GP numerous times, who kept wanting to put me on antidepressants, and I resisted that. And then I tried every other talking therapy under the sun, and none of it really worked for me. And I was on the phone to my sister one day, and she said, why don't you go and see a life coach? And I said, because life coaching is bullshit. And I meant it. I absolutely meant it. I believed that at the time. And she said, okay, well, that's fair enough. You're entitled to your opinion. Why don't you go and see if your opinion is right? So I was like, okay, fine. So off I went. I had a two-hour session with this lady who massively undercharged me. She helped me fundamentally change my life in that two-hour period. And it felt like the earth had kind of cracked open underneath me. It was a profound and deep and moving experience. And I came out 2 hours later thinking two things. One, I would have paid 10 times what I just did for this new understanding that I have of myself and how much better I felt and how much more relieved I felt about my life, and maybe it wasn't all just going to spiral down the pan. And two, that felt like magic. I want to be able to do that. Like, how is that possible? She just asked me what seemed like some very basic questions, and suddenly, like, I'm sobbing on her sofa and like rooting around in the kind of shadows of my psyche. I was like, I just wanted to see if this was bullshit or not. Turns out it's not bullshit. So I finished that story, and then I say, and that's why I became a coach. And by connecting that, you're then bringing that situation back into why you're on that phone call with that person in the first place. So I think it's a powerful way to do that. Sailors, a transfer of enthusiasm. There you go, you can have that one for free. Be human. Allow who you are to come through in consultations. This is a really big one as well, because I was so worried about what I thought a coach should do and look like and say and sound like and all the rest of it, that because I had this vision in my head of what a professional person should be doing. And the issue with that is I never really connected with people. As soon as someone gave me a bit of advice and just said, just be yourself, and I was like, are you sure? And I sort of began to sort of allow a little more vulnerability and allow them to sort of see more of myself. And as soon as I started doing that, I started converting inquiries into clients. They are buying into you as much the idea of coaching, if not more. They are buying a relationship, effectively, with one single human being, not with an organisation, not with a company, with you as a person. So that was a very important realisation that I came to. quick one. Conduct your lead conversion process however it works best for you. I say that because the only person to have ruined my 100% conversion rate was someone who I changed my process for. He was a very strong personality. He managed to convince me or manipulate me into thinking that we could do this process slightly differently. We did it differently and it didn't work. So find a process that works for you, stick to it like glue. The final one, they need you, not the other way around. Neediness is toxic. This is a huge one. If you need their business, then they will feel that and they will run a mile from you. So, and it's a weird sort of dynamic that you can't quite put your finger on, but essentially the dynamic that works for me is this idea that I value the product that I'm giving, I value the service that I'm giving, I think the service is valued at the right price, and if you want it, that's great, I can help you, and if you don't want it, that's fine, you can find someone else. But it has to be that kind of, if you want it, fantastic, if you don't, that's okay. And that is a feeling that will come across. I mean, I do all my consultations by phone, and that feeling even manages to get transmitted not face-to-face. Don't know how, but it does. So, creating the right environment and positioning yourself for success. So this was the thing that I think it took me the longest to actually understand. I wasn't sort of looking after myself or my own needs, I guess. And I also wasn't... I wasn't sort of consciously building the business in my head. I was just sort of chasing the next client, the next client, the next client, slightly higher fees, et cetera, et cetera. And so I then started to look at it in a different way, as in what are the kind of components of what this business actually should look like. So what does your client journey look like? By that I mean when your clients, right from becoming a sort of inquiry point to you, from that point up to when they leave you having had a coaching package with you, what have they experienced? Like, how has that felt for them? Would anything have felt like it was missing? Should there have been more follow-up? Should there have been more this, more that? Venue, this was another important one for me because I knew something wasn't quite right about the venue and I was trying to decide on a private venue or a public venue, but then I started charging the kind of prices where I thought people would want to be in a private space, and it turns out I was wrong a lot of the time. Your assumptions are often wrong about these things. And then admin, very boring, but how did I plan sessions? How did I take notes on them? Did I need to take notes on them? How did I follow those up? Etc., etc. Contracting, setting expectations between you and the client, very, very important. I realised that a lot of my anxiety around a client journey was the fact that I had not told them what was expected and vice versa. And contact between sessions. Is it okay? How much of it's okay? What works for you? And obviously contracting around that. And then for you to do your best work, so looking after yourself. For me, like these three things at the bottom can be encompassed by the word preparation. Like I need to be prepared to for all of those things to work. And when you have a full-time job and you're coaching in the evenings, you know, I finish work at 6 o'clock, I travel 45 minutes across London, I have to do an hour's coaching session, sometimes two, then I travel home, I get home at 9 o'clock, I'm knackered, that's an understatement, knackered all the time. So it was really important for me to learn how to kind of look after that and make sure that I, you know, wasn't completely shattered all the time. And getting those things right gave me more confidence, and in turn, the more confident I was, the better my coaching was, the closer relationship I had with the client, and so on. Two quick things. Pushing through the grind and banking credit. These are things that I say to myself in the mirror when everything feels like it's going nowhere. Sam touched on this as well. In fact, Sam stole both my final points, so thank you for that. That's the problem with going last. Pushing through the grind, that's basically, you know, when I was going to bed every night, you know, 11 o'clock or whatever, and thinking, why am I doing this? I'm absolutely knackered. I've had no time for myself. My relationship was beginning to suffer a little bit because I wasn't making enough time for it. Why am I doing this? And for me, it was just a question of acceptance, as Sam said, and just being resilient about it and going, this may not feel like it's working at the moment, but actually, you know that you're doing all the right things, so carry on doing them. And for me, banking credit is the way that I managed to kind of rationalise that for myself, which was basically to say that it's almost kind of like a karma thing. Yes, this is really hard work at the moment, and yes, I'm pretty tired all the time, and now I don't seem to be making enough money for all of the kind of tiredness and inconvenience that I've managed to create for myself. But it will come to something at some point, and you will begin to reap the rewards of that. That credit will come back to you. So carry on banking the credit, carry on banking the credit. Every hour that I coach after work is another hour's experience. It's another hour that I've helped somebody else. And that has been, those two things have kind of really helped me push through the darker times. And then finally, as Sam said, build a meaningful support network. And there's two different types of support for me. There's the kind of friends, family, partner support, which is lovely. There's a but coming here. And it's exactly what you expect from your friends and family, but they are not, they don't know anything about coaching, they don't know anything, or most of them won't know anything about one-to-one talking therapies, etc. So you come home and you say, oh, I've had a, you know, it was a tough session, or I've had a really good session with this client, or whatever. And they say all the right things. They go, oh, that sounds difficult. And then they carry on making a stir fry. Or they say, oh, well done, that's really good. And that's lovely, that's just what you want to hear. But it also doesn't really mean anything, because it's not, it's for me, because it's not really attached to what's actually, I say it doesn't mean anything. Of course it means a lot, but you know what I mean. The other type of support is the meaningful type. And by that, I mean, actually I don't, meaningful encompasses both of them. But there's the kind of more practical side. So as Sam touched on, having identifying some peers that you either respect and are further ahead in their journey, or what was really helpful for me was people who are exactly the same stage in their journey, sharing challenges and successes and all that kind of thing. Because coaching is actually quite a solitary profession. It's just you and the client in the room. And you can't go and talk to the client in the pub afterwards about what a shocking session that was, for obvious reasons. So you have no one to talk to about it. So it all just sits in your head. And when you see someone over the course of 3 or 4 months, you build all these ideas in your head about whether or not it's going well and what they think of the coaching and whether or not they're getting value from it. And obviously you check in with some of those things with the client, but some of it is just all up in your head. And that's, for me, not a good place to keep all that stuff. So I obviously talking to your peers is a really good way to kind of to share that stuff. By far the best money I've ever spent, which is in the last 3 or 4 months, was getting a coach supervisor, which is someone who can give you a bit of coaching, but also they can give you a bit of advice and a bit of direction. They can brainstorm with you, they can give you different ideas. I came up against a real brick wall with my increased pricing recently, and she made a very intelligent observation that I was now the most expensive fish in the pond, basically, or fisherman by the fish in the pond. And so I was now fishing in the wrong pond, which is I had just not worked it out for myself. It's a really, really obvious thing, but I just hadn't worked it out. So she said, why don't you just go and benchmark yourself against everyone else and just see where you stack up? And I did it, and there were, I think, three people in Life Coach Directory more expensive than I was. Like, that's why the phone isn't ringing anymore, because I now look incredibly expensive, even though I'm not. I'm a bargain. So yeah, get a coach or get a coach supervisor would be my advice to that. And I think that's it. I'll just let you read the Live Powerfully message, because this is what I mentioned it earlier and promised you could read it. So there you go. My guiding principle is to live powerfully. I believe it is our duty to live as powerfully as we can, to be in control of our lives, to find purpose, to choose our path, to make a positive impact on everyone around us, and to create an extraordinary legacy. Not to drift or be blown around by the different pressures in our lives, not to allow others power over how we think, feel, or act, and not to wake up at the age of 65, having worked towards someone else's dream for 40 years, wondering what happened and why we didn't do more. Living powerfully is about learning to fully understand yourself, harnessing your emotional intelligence, and then forging your own path to creating a rich and rewarding future. There is my message.
Okay, everybody. So what we're going to do now is we're all going to be standing here at the front, because we don't allow people to sit down when we're standing at the front. So this is an opportunity for you guys to, if you've got some questions, this is your opportunity to ask them directly to the panel. Any questions you've got. So who'd like to kick us off? Who's got a burning question they'd like to ask? Yes. Okay. Marketing strategy. Yeah? Just to hear what it is that they might do. Yeah, who would like to pick up on that and start?
I'll go first.
Yeah?
Intuitive. So it's all about being yourself, finding out which activities work naturally for you. For example, some people are great about writing, you know, and so blogging, posting on Facebook or whatever, and using social media. Some people are great in person, so speaking gigs. Some people might prefer to make videos or sound recordings. So you find those activities which come naturally to you. You play to your strengths, and you know just where you feel the energy. Just do it like that.
So this is weird. My marketing strategy is not that much of a strategy. It's more that I use the Life Coach directory for pretty much everything, because it sort of does all of the expensive hard work for you. If you want to pay to get yourself up the Google rankings, you have to pay literally thousands. I think Michael Server spends about £2,500 a month on making sure he appears at the top of every list. I mean, he makes £250,000 a year, so it works out okay for him. But you do have to spend a lot on that. Whereas if you Google Life Coach SW4, it first throws up the Life Coach directory. You click on that, and I'm one of the four or five people that come up in that way. So it does all of that kind of geographical stuff for you. So I think it's nailing your message, as I discussed, is a really important thing to do, and then use the Life Coach directory as a platform to get that out to people.
So I started off with in-person networking, so going to different networking events, which is a really quick way to get clients. I found it wasn't very sustainable long-term, and I'm not particularly great at in-person networking. I find if I'm not speaking to someone interesting, then I just want to leave. I then sort of shifted quite consciously onto online, focusing on a lot of Facebook. Anyone who knows me knows I'm all over Facebook. I did make a bit of a mistake though, in that when I shifted to Facebook, I kind of went into marketing mode, and I kind of forgot a bit about the sales. So I had a really, really good January, and then I had like nothing in. I had no clients coming in February, like no new clients. So I've now shifted back to actually finding ways of having online conversations, one-to-one conversations with people. So I think it's just finding what works for you and experimenting and going from there.
Lovely, brilliant, thank you. So there's something in there around authenticity of what is it you feel you want to do that works for you and that you actually enjoy and can have energy for, but also that message, if it's authentic, if authentically you and your message, then the people that you want to work with will be able to find you. Yeah, lovely.
So my message was entirely about what I wanted my own life to look like. So I didn't worry about the niche at all. All I did was worry about... I tried to write the message in a million different ways, and then I realised that I was just trying to write it as if... I was trying to write from the perspective of people I thought what they wanted to read. So the message I came up with that worked was the one that I want. Like, that's what I want my life to look like. And then you're not really selling it at all. You just put it in front of people, which you can do without a website. You can do that with a Life Coach directory. You can do that without branding, without an email signature, without paying someone to do all of that stuff. The message is the thing that hits people.
Question to everybody. In terms of how to find your emerging coaching identity, what I mean by that, like finding your own weirdness, your authenticity, something special that makes you you. So are you aware about some techniques or something? Because I can do lots of self-reflections, but sometimes it could be visible for others. So this is part where I'm struggling with, and to find something about me that I can market, scale, and that will be differentiate me in the market.
So some tips or techniques around how you might get clearer about your identity and something which might mark you out a bit. Your weirdness. Love that, yeah. So anybody, yeah, go for it, Ross.
There's a couple of things coming up there for me. One was what Will was saying is, what is your weirdness? If you know what your weirdness is, put it out there. But if you don't know, then just dive in there and start being weird, and then look back and see how weird you've been and identify it. And once you can see, yeah, okay, I'm such and such a type of person, or this is how I'm, these are the sort of clients I'm attracting, this is how I'm working, these are the areas I'm interested in. For example, with me, I'm weird about the coaching with a client's shadow. Then that becomes kind of your identity. So get in there, just dive in, and then look back and see how weird you are.
Yeah, I don't think this is the sort of thing you can work out on paper. I think you really have to just get out there and experience it. For me, I guess I kind of knew who I was, but I had a lot of shame and guilt as well about being that person. So for me, like stripping away, working on shame, working on all these like lower emotions that were keeping me held back really helped. So yeah, some of the subconscious work that I talk about.
Stop following me around.
Yeah. Weird. That's my weirdness. I follow.
I absolutely agree with Sam. I think that it's you can plan it to death, and you might be wrong. I think the only way you can find that out is to go and coach and coach and coach, and you'll find that. I mean, I had some really clear assumptions about the kinds of people I wanted to work with and the kinds of people I thought I'd be really, really good at working with, and I was completely wrong. And only by coaching tons and tons of different people around tons and tons of different things did I discover the things that I absolutely loved coaching people around, and that's what became my sort of weirdness, if you like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, awesome. Thanks. Brilliant. Okay, we've got lots of questions. Let's come here first.
Where did you see the clients when you first began to...
This is my second question. Yes.
Okay.
When you first began to see clients.
Okay, so... Where did you start to work with clients? Is that to anybody in particular or just the panel? Who would like to grab that one?
Skype. I know Skype, but where physically did you get an office?
Okay. So where did you start to work with clients and what have you learned through that process perhaps as well? Who wants to go for that?
Home. I've got an office at home, so I had people there, but I'm doing everything on Skype now.
Right. Is it, have either of you guys worked in public places?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do it on the Skype as well. Do it on the Skype as well. Quite a lot in cafes, actually, in coffee shops, as long as it's the right vibe. And generally, the busier, the better, so you can kind of hide in plain sight. And, you know, if you're having lots of noisy conversations all going on, then generally, you know, people will be quite forthcoming, actually. I do occasionally hire a consulting room. There is some professional consulting rooms for coaches and therapists where I live, so... They're quite affordable if you've got a stream of clients. Very occasionally, I'll see a client at home. And occasionally, I will go to a client's residence or whatever, or office. So it's pretty wide, actually.
After I got to a certain price point, I think I mentioned I felt like I needed to coach people in a private space. So I was coaching in the... members bar, which is the top floor of the Royal Festival Hall, which you can become a member of for about, only really helps if you live in London, obviously, but for about £70 a year you have a year's membership of that, and it's a sort of, it is a public space but for members only, and it's wall to wall life coaches up there. You can spot them a mile away. One sobbing, one holding a notepad. But actually, as I edged my price up, I did feel I needed to offer a private space. I then made some assumptions about, this person will want a public space because they're an entrepreneur, and this person will want a private space because they're talking to me about their love life. Again, I was always wrong about them, so now I just give them the option. So I've got the public space if they want it, and the private space is a well-being clinic in Mayfair, which I pay an hourly rate for. So, yeah, I just give them the option.
Sorry, is there a question connected to that?
Sure, yeah.
If you're having just a conversation, but if you want to integrate, for example, some exercise to release, I don't know, the feel, it can look quite weird, or the person, the client can feel quite subconscious. So how do you do that in a public space? Is it going to be a very static session?
Yeah, you're right. It's not always appropriate to do the deeper exercises in a public space. So maybe that would be the first session you have with that particular client. You say, well, we'll try such and such a cafe or whatever, and then if you sense that you need to go deeper, then obviously you choose a more appropriate environment.
Yeah.
Subsequently.
I'm thinking just on the short term, while I'm doing my Animas course and I need to achieve a certain time of hours. It would be difficult, the investment of the diploma plus the investment of the renting a room would not be paid back. So I was wondering if there is another way to have cost zero while we do at least the training, but maybe there is not.
Yeah, hotels sometimes, lounges, foyers. You find a space that's kind of semi-private, works for you.
Yeah.
I did perceptual positions in the members bar of the South Bank Centre, and it was a bit weird, but it was fine. I asked the client if it was okay, and that's what the major lesson that came from that was, not making any assumptions about whether or not they're okay with it or whether or not. Some people just aren't bothered and are happy to just do whatever in a public space. Other people are terrified of it, so ask them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely work with your clients to find out what they feel, because some clients will prefer a bit more privacy if they're talking about something. Others are usually quite happy, so work with what you've got. Yes?
Just in terms of the quality of the connection and relationship over Skype or face-to-face, you all do a lot of Skype work. Do you find that that inhibits the clients at all, or makes no difference?
Okay, Skype work. So. You don't do Skype work? Let's go here. Telephone work.
Skype mainly for me. Occasionally telephone, but it's a bit not quite as clear. I was surprised that actually the first couple of Skype sessions I had, I didn't find any difference between that and in person. And sometimes it's actually better. I liken it to driving at night, where all you see is the cat's eyes in the road, the street signs, and the car headlights. You just concentrate on the essentials. So if you're on Skype, you just hear the voice and you just see, you know, fuzzy shape of the person, and you just get the basics. And sometimes, this happens quite a lot with female clients, in the first few sessions they switch their camera off. They don't want to be seen. So all you've got is the voice, but your hand's free because it's Skype, which is brilliant for making notes and so on. And you can get so much out of the voice. I don't find it any difference. So whatever works for you, but it's the presence, the energy, still the contact, the rapport is still there for me. Not affected at all. Not affected at all. In my perception, anyway.
So the work that I do, the matrix work, I actually feel a lot of energy. So when people are clearing stuff, I cough and I yawn and stuff. And that started happening over Skype. So I was like, okay, so this is working over Skype. So I'm feeling what's going on, the clients... still clearing stuff, so you know, it definitely still works. I think also people feel quite safe in their own environment. If they're at home. I've got one client who can't actually come to my house because she's got OCD. I wish she would just come and clean my house. But I'm getting her there. She's nearly there. So she phones me from her car and we do a session in the car. So yeah.
Thanks, Sam. So I'd also encourage you just to try different modes, see what works for you, because it's important it works for you as well as your clients. So just try this stuff out. I similarly here, I've found Skype works surprisingly well. I might have had some scepticism around it initially, but actually it works surprisingly well. Yes?
Sorry, can I be greedy and ask two questions?
I don't know. Let's ask your first one and we'll see. Okay, is it linked then?
It's linked.
Okay, go for it.
Second question is, when you started off, is there an indication you can help us with at what level? Did you increase? How quickly?
Okay. Okay, so question on fees. Where did you start and where perhaps did you start? How did you feel comfortable to increase? And do you have a flat rate or do you work at different levels with different people? Who wants to have a go at that?
So the first time I sat in front of someone and charged them money, it was £25 an hour, and it was the most terrifying hour of my life, because I'd done loads and loads of coaching. It's really fun when no money is exchanging hands, because you're just sort of still enjoying these amazing tools that you now have at your disposal and watching things happen for people. As soon as money becomes involved, or for me anyway, suddenly a transaction was happening, and they were sitting in front of me with an expectation. I'm paying you this money, therefore you're going to help me. I realise what's wrong with that dynamic in my head. You don't need to tell me. you have to start somewhere, so it doesn't really matter where. But I started at 25 quid an hour because it seemed about the right sort of amount. But then Nick Bolton basically advised me to, as part of the mentoring I had with him, he advised me to always be nudging my prices up. The reason being that you might not feel worth that amount of money, but when you've coached someone at that amount of money, suddenly it does feel worth it because they've achieved results and they've travelled from, you know, A to B. Their life has changed a bit in whatever way. So it actually was worth the £50 an hour that you charge them. And so, yeah, I've gone up and up from there. So I'm now at £900 for six sessions. 900 for six, not 900 for one. Across the board, completely. Yeah.
Flat rate.
Flat rate. And sometimes people will call and say, oh, I checked, you know, a month ago, and actually, you know, your price was 800 or whatever, and I say, yeah, it was. and again, that shows that you have confidence in the value of what you're doing. So.
Yeah, awesome. Brilliant. Thanks, Will.
Yes, we make a huge big issue out of this pricing thing. It's a really big issue for coaches. And like Will says, when you first start out, you agonise over pricing. Basically, you end up, you can become comfortable with a certain range of prices for certain types of clients. I price intuitively, you wouldn't be surprised to know. And sometimes I'll get a great client in front of me, and I know they can't afford me. I know it. But I'll work with them anyway because I want to work with them. So I'm choosing them because they're a great client, and I really enjoy working with them. I'll develop, I'll learn. And then there's, you know, somebody who's can refer other people to you, you know. So it's I see it as a win. I don't see it as a loss. This is that voluntary private partnership thing going on in me. Sometimes if it's a business client and he's ringing from London, the price doubles just because he's ringing from London. You know, a quick look on his website while you're chatting to him. Oh, your turnover's in the millions. Is that okay? Well, it's just gone up again. And that's the business clients. Occasionally, you need to charge sufficient so that it's reassuringly expensive. Yeah. Otherwise, if you're too cheap, you can't be any good. Yeah. So, you know, big cojones, double it.
Okay. My first paying client gave me £1 per session. Then it was £5 a session. That was while I was studying. Similar to Will, in that I've just sort of edged it up as I've gone. I had an upper limit, which was kind of hilarious, because I had my previous role in IT, we were charging £100 an hour for our work. So that was kind of my benchmark of like the top that I could charge. So I was charging £100 an hour as a package. And I put my prices up, and then I had a conversation, had a discovery call. The person agreed to the package, and I think I'd priced it £150. And somehow during the conversation, I'd managed to give her a discount, give her more sessions, and ended it back at £100. I was like, damn it, how did that happen? And then she asked me if it was... I booked 12 sessions and she thought it was 6. So, yeah, I gave her double the amount of sessions. So that's when I was like, okay, I need to work on my money stuff. Because we seem to have this benchmark, and it's almost like where you've given yourself permission to earn that much. And it's just like this threshold you have to push through. So, yeah, working on self-worth, working on money stories can help to improve that.
Thank you. I think sometimes if you're moving from that space of not charging to charging, one of the things you can do is ask yourself, well, what would I be comfortable charging right now? And start there and then see where it goes from there. So that's something else you might think about. So we've got time probably for one more question. So, yes, right here.
It's something I didn't realise I was doing. It was, again, intuitive. And one of my colleagues in the cancer coaching community has written quite a heavyweight academic paper about this. But in essence, what it is, it's a combination of deep coaching presence. Are we intermittent here?
No.
Sorry.
Just hold it down.
Okay. Okay. So it's deep coaching presence. It's mindfulness. It's emotional intelligence. And it's acknowledging whatever is present without judgment. And this can be quite scary. So you might feel the fear in the room and acknowledge it. And you take some courage to do this. And if the client can acknowledge their fear, or whatever it is, this is the shadow thing coming out again, then that has a power which contributes to the healing process. So it's a combination of things. And it's a way of working which only a coach who's done the work on themselves is comfortable from doing. So you can't go to your client's dark side if you haven't been to your own first. So it's for those who go dark and deep on themselves, then you're able to help other people. You can hold the space for someone to go there and find the healing. Does that help? Yeah. I can share that paper with you if you want it. Get in touch and I'll send it to you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Okay, so before we close, I'm without having said this to you guys, I'm just going to ask you, if you've got one, what would be your one tip for new coaches out there who are thinking of starting a business? What's the one tip that you'd give them from where you are now?
Work on your own stuff.
Okay, work on your own stuff.
Be courageous.
Yeah, be courageous. Nice one. And finally.
Start coaching and do lots of it and start charging and get rid of your free clients.
There we go. Awesome. Thank you, guys. Right. So that's pretty much it. Just one thing to say that I'm holding it too close now. If any of you are thinking about building a practice, there is a new Animas program, which some of you may have heard of. The coach, what's it called? Thank you. The Coaching Business Accelerator, that's it. Robert Stevenson has done a webinar on this. There is a link on Facebook, which you could find. If you can't find that, then just get in touch with Robert, and he will tell you when the next webinar is, or where you can find the recording. So if we don't see you tonight, we might see you tomorrow. And if we don't see you tomorrow, we might see you some other time. In the meantime, thank you guys for coming. Thanks again to our speakers. And see you all soon.